The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. This is 91.7 FM, WH West Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's February 13th, 2023. Hey, the day before Valentine's Day. We'll maybe talk a little bit about that when we get into the show. This is to be rebroadcast on February 15th at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with or without, not sure yet. She's kind of gone in and out, my lovely co-host, Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. Maybe one of us can get back to you. I might be able to respond. You never know. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live right here, then you can comment below in the little box down below here. And hopefully we can get back to you. If not, and you're listening to this on an audio file or a podcast, you can drop me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Hey, Joel. Hey, Robert. How you guys doing this morning? We got some listeners out there. Cool. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet, maybe. I'm hearing that's a maybe, not a positive. Anyway, Ron's rant of the week. Here we go. Riding in the dark, and I'm not talking about after the sun sets. So I'm going to reflect on a story of an observation of someone who was just on a bicycle, just waiting to be hit. Invisible, camouflaged, whatever you want to call them, wearing the darkest clothes possible, nothing whatsoever on the bike to indicate that there's a bicycle on the road, no flashing beacons, no reflectorized gear, no bright jackets or jerseys, nothing at all, just riding their bike down the road. And I got to tell you, I wouldn't have made a comment about this, except I came upon this person very, very rapidly and did not see them until I was really on top of them. If I, who am very aware of people who ride bicycles down the road, am alerted at this level, then how is everyone else going to see this person? So we live in a college town. We have a couple of universities here, and oftentimes we find that lots of the college kids, especially those that are coming in from other countries, they tend to not understand that we have this car mentality here in the United States, and it's horrible and it's dangerous, and you can't ride a bicycle in the same fashion with the same degree of safety as you would if you were elsewhere. So I think that's where some of this comes from. I could not tell whether this person was young or old. I was just trying to avoid hitting them. So it's just really, it is a problem. And if you're going to go out and ride your bike, have at least something on that bike that indicates that you're out there and on the road. It really makes a big difference. It'll help us all. And it'll keep someone from having a really, really bad day, or maybe two someones, the person who hits and the person who is hit. So anyway, I'll move on my rant on that one. Visibility is key. I talk about it a lot, and I hope that at some point in time, people are going to start listening to this. So we'll see. But anyway, want to make the road safer? Let's make the road safer in so many ways. Let's see, what else do I have on here? I'm going to repeat that on a positive side, the Ride of Silence is live. You can check it out on our Facebook page, and that will be the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. We are doing currently the only Connecticut Ride of Silence, that I see listed right now is the one that Kevin Mahan and I are hosting in Storrs, Connecticut, up at the Mansfield Community Center. So please, please, please check it out. And we would love to have you there. It'd be great to not hear from you. It's a ride of silence. That was a joke. Anyway, we will have a get together beforehand, and I'm sure that'll be very social as we meet and gather, but then the ride is silent. It's only silent for 3.5 or 4 miles, so it's not very long that you have to keep your mouth shut or stay quiet. But, you know, anyway, that's what it is. It is a ride of silence, and you should check it out, and we would love to have you there. And we're talking May, because that would be Bike Month, which is National Bike Month, and there's all sorts of national bicycle-related items going on at that time. So hope to see you there. That would be a really cool thing. Something else is happening fairly soon, and also on the positive side, is I am hosting with the Mansfield Community Center a Pedal to End Cancer, and it is at our Mansfield Community Center at the end of the month. It would be the 25th, I believe. Yes, Saturday, February 25th. The event starts at 10 a.m. and runs until 1 p.m. And it is a, you can ride for an hour, you can ride for 2 hours, you can ride for 3 hours, all 3 hours if you want to do it. I will be there for all 3 hours, convincing and coaxing and coaching people through 3 hours worth of sitting on a spin bike should they decide to go that far. Each hour has a price tag on it, so you can check the results out on our Facebook page, because I posted it up there this morning, so you can take a look at that. If you are a member of our local bicycle club, the Thread City Cyclers, there is a meetup out there about it too. The other thing about this too, which is kind of cool, and I'm looking to, you know, try to inspire more people to help out with this. I've got two very close concerns in my family. Both my sisters had cancer, one of which survived and one of which did not. So I will be riding for both Susan and Jean on this particular event. But anyway, we will have a virtual event. So what that means is, by the looks of things, the person I'm dealing with, Jessica Tracy at the community center, said that she has a Zoom slot that can hold up to like 100 participants. So if you want to ride on your trainer at home and join in on that and use that as a way to support your fundraising for the event, and then be part of the party, so to speak, we're going to have a big screen up in the actual spin studio in the spin room at the community center. And you can kind of join in with the rest of us, and we'll have some fun with it. I will be running a Spotify playlist, which if you are signed up for this, I can send you over the link for. So if you want to have your own music at, or the music that we're using at home, you can use that too. That's great. We'll figure it out. But anyway, that's what we're working on right now. So you can raise money for a good cause and take anywhere from 1 hour to 3 hours. And you get to take a spin class with Ron, or an indoor cycling class, as I do not prefer to call them spin classes. So if you've never done that before and you'd like to become a part of it, that's great. If you're local and you want to join us and you want to, you know, hop in for a ride, there is no fee to get into the community center that day. And you just need to jump in and, you know, dedicate a donation to the Cancer Society. That's all. So anyway, I'm hoping to see a bunch of you folks there. That'd be really kind of fun, looking at using this as a fundraising event. I may eventually do a fundraising event for the Heart Association later on due to my heart issues here. And just as a way to bring awareness out there, because, you know, heart disease is the number one killer in the United States. Number one, believe that. Not cancer, heart. Anyway, there you go. So I had a day last week where this is also positive side stuff, where I put on in a whopping 11.5 miles on my bicycle outdoors. And how did I do that? I did that pedaling with my bike with a rack on the back and panniers, and went to a couple of different grocery stores and ran some errands and came home with about 30 pounds worth of food on the back of my bike. And I'm just feeling really positive about that. So I thought I would put that on the positive side, because it is a positive thing. It's kind of cool. So anyway, again, as I encourage people at the end of each of these podcasts and radio shows to, you know, take one day and, you know, park your car and use your bike, it's great. It's really, really fun. And we're having some ridiculous weather here, because this is so, so unusual for us. But we're having, occasional 50-degree days here. As a matter of fact, as I looked out at the thermometer before I come on the air today, I noticed that it had hit 50 degrees already here today, which is crazy. This is February. This is unusual. We're just about halfway through the month. It is February 13th, so we're getting really, really close to mid-month, because there are only 28 days in February, and we are just breaking all sorts of warm weather records. So, crazy thing, my big fear is, because I am a New Englander and I have been a New Englander my whole life, is that everything always kind of evens itself out. So I'm anticipating some cold snaps coming up. But hi, Frank. Hi, Wade. Thanks for joining in. Joel says heat wave. Yeah. Well, you know, Joel, you've been around here long enough to know that. Joel was the owner of a bicycle shop in New Haven, Connecticut, for a number of years, called Cycles La Chance. So, and he has interesting character points. That's a compliment, by the way, Joel, just so you know. So anyway, we go back in time. We were both in business about the same time here in Connecticut. So it was, we got to hear stories through, a sales rep who would travel between the shops and tell stories about the two of us back and forth. So good. Yeah, Joel says big storms come in March. Maybe. We'll see. The way this weather's going, you know, they say that February is supposed to be the snowiest month. That certainly isn't going to hold true this year. I don't know if we'll ever see any snow the way things are going right now. So anyway, moving on. Next thing on my list here, mechanical minute and cycling tips. Okay, here it is. Fenders. Who would have thought? Your bike probably needs fenders, but here's how to know. So anyway, I found this interesting little cool site, and it talks about fenders. And the reason I bring up fenders is because the bike that I was riding on the other day has fenders on it. And, you know, you really don't understand how good they can be until you're in a situation where you should need something like that. I was riding on a perfectly good day. I did hop up onto the airline trail and was riding into my next town over, Willimantic, and there's still a few wet spots on the trail. Although the trail is in very, very good shape, and it's pretty hard packed, and it's not soft and peanut buttery like it would normally be this time of year, there were still a couple of places where there was water oozing out of the ground. So there were some wet spots. And, you know, if you've got fenders on your bike, you don't even think about it. I could hear the sand clicking up against the fender walls of the fender, but not a drop on me. And the bike looked real good when I was done. So I'm really appreciating fenders. I remember going for a ride a number of years ago, a group ride with a bunch of my, you know, racer friends who were, riding their fancy bicycles, and they had particulars about them, you know, being bike snobby type people. And I showed up with a set of fenders on my bike. And of course, I had to modify them a little bit to put them on, because my bike wasn't really equipped to hold fenders. But, you know, when you work in a bike shop or you're in the bicycle industry, you figure out a way, and there's always a way. So I was able to trim them out real nice and put them on my bike. And I rode to the ride with my fenders on and met everyone. And they all, of course, gave me a really, really hard time, because, you know, what are you doing putting that garbage on your bike? You know, I got all the comments about, you know, from the purists who said would never put anything like that on their bike, on and on and on. And I just kind of laughed at them and said, yeah, well, you know, the roads are wet. The snow is melting on the sides of the road. We have a lot of moisture, and I don't like getting wet. So there it is. As we got deeper into the ride, I found myself in the front pulling more than I was sitting in the back because everyone wanted to ride on my wheel. Interesting, huh? And of course, I believe about a week later, I showed up to another ride where we all got together to go for a training ride in the you know, early season. And lo and behold, there were three or four other people there with fenders on their bikes. You know, sometimes you just have to, you know, put it all aside and be smart and be practical. So if you ride on pavement, then you don't need fenders to keep yourself clean and protect your bike from grime and dings. Even in dry climates, fenders will block spray from runoff, spills, and all that. It doesn't say you don't. It says then you need fenders. Because, you know, you never know when there's going to be a little puddle on the side of the road. And it definitely makes a difference. There are also these nifty things you can put on your bike called frame guards. And they just clip onto the actual frame of the bike and keep splatter from coming up at you off the front wheel. That's kind of a cool way to do it. So, but fenders are super, super helpful. Personally, they will protect you as well as protecting your bike. So they're going to keep all of the wet and the nasty and the sandy and the, you know, the crud from the road from splashing up onto your valuable bicycle. And, you know, the places that are of concern are brakes and derailleurs, you know, things that are moving and functional. And it just really keeps them from getting all splattered with all this crud, which really helps preserve your bike a bit. When you live up here in the Northeast like we do, you run into the problem of we also have salt and sand on the road this time of year. And the salt is really bad for your bike, which brings me to the when you get done with your ride, you should always spray your bike down anyway. But that's another story. But they stay, the roads definitely stay wet long after a rainstorm stops, not to mention the irrigation runoff and all that. You're definitely going to hit a wet spot on the road at some point. So wheel spray, there's another one right there. And that's a biggie because especially off of that front wheel, if you've ever looked at a good set of fenders, you'll see that they usually have a spray guard on the bottom of the front fender. And it kind of looks like a skirt or something that sticks out. And that's there for a really, really good reason. Because you get spray off of that front wheel and your feet will be wet in a matter of minutes if you don't have that there. Because it comes straight back to where your feet are. And then once your feet get wet and it's cold out, and now you've got wet, cold feet. And maybe you have booties on, maybe you don't have booties on. But your feet are going to get really, really cold. So why not keep them dry by putting a set of fenders on? I love them. I think they're great. I have made the move in that direction. I am not embarrassed by having fenders on my bike. I think they're really practical and they make a lot of sense. So that's why I wanted to kind of talk about fenders just a little bit today, because there are a lot of different ways of doing it. And they're not easy to mount all the time. They can be tricky, and you got to get them lined up right. And once again, your local bike shop will be able to do this for you, so you don't have to fight with it if you don't want to. But if you've got the time, you can do it. It definitely makes a big, big difference. Yeah, Wade says keeps that drivetrain clean. Yeah, it sure does. And, you know... Joel, I am not showing my age. Anyway, it does keep your drive train clean. So the chain stays a little bit cleaner and you keep yourself from kicking up a lot of sand into that drivetrain and grinding through and wearing things out. Just really, they make a ton of sense. And, but again, they're not always easy to mount, but there are some interesting styles of fenders out there. There are shorty fenders, which are semi-functional, we'll call it that, that will just keep generally right around the brakes clean, and that's probably going to be it. There's fenders that you can clamp onto the back of a seat post, and it just puts a big flap out the back and keeps you from getting the rooster tail up your back. If you don't know what a rooster tail is, then I'm not going to try to explain, but you're going to be really messy. So you can get that too. The other thing is, and what works really, really good too, is if you have a rack on the back of the bike, oh, now we're really stepping overboard. We're going to rack and fenders. If you have a rack on the back of your bike, a lot of the racks have a platform on them, and that serves as a sort of pseudo fender too, and keeps a lot of things off of you too from the back end. And, you know, there is a lot of kick up that comes off the rear wheel. So that's where the rooster tail comes from. But you're best to use a full fender if you can. And let's see, where are the complaints about fenders? I thought that was in this article, but not always. Some people complain that, you know, fenders they're going to slow you down. They're going to I hate the slow you down thing, because you know what? If you're riding in weather that requires a fender, if you're riding at a time of the year that requires a fender, it's not about going fast. It's about just getting on your bike and doing what you need to do, whether it be functional for, commuting or running errands in town or whatever, like I was the other day. Joel says, doesn't everyone have multiple bikes? Well, everyone I know has multiple bikes. I do agree. Then the proper number of bikes to have is N plus one. We all know that. But yeah, I do have various bicycles that I use for various things. I do need to put a set of fenders back on my cyclocross bike for this time of year, because I haven't done that yet. But I've just been kind of buzzing around on my little commuter lately, which has been kind of perfect. So it's really, really good. Most of the time this time of year, I'm inside, so you know, I don't need the fenders as much. But boy, if this weather keeps going in this direction and it keeps getting as warm as it gets, I might have to start commuting to the community center to teach my classes. Could happen. You never know. I know it's early season for that, but I'm telling you, I think I heard a report that later this week we are expecting to see temperatures back up to 60 degrees. This is unheard of here. It's just completely unheard of. I believe that climate change has hit the northeastern corner of the country, because we're just seeing some crazy stuff going on. I know that California and the West is getting a lot more moisture than we are, and they really need the moisture. Unfortunately, when they get it, they're not prepared for it, so it runs into a problem there. But yeah, we're just having the most unusual winter I've experienced in the time that I've been here. So, you know, it happens. So there's certain bikes that can have problems with fenders, and, you know, like a graveler or cyclocross bike, like I just mentioned, a cross bike. If you're going off road and you're getting in the woods and you're snagging onto branches and things like that, they can certainly that could be a less hospitable situation and condition to use them. But you know what? Deep mud also, if you're doing a mountain bike or a cyclocross thing, the deep mud can get really rough. So you gotta watch out for that sort of thing. But it really depends on what you're using your bike for. That's really what it comes down to. This time of year, when I'm using fenders, I'm obviously using them because I want to stay relatively clean when I'm commuting with my bike or just running some errands or doing whatever around town. I think that plastic fenders are basically the best way to go, because they're pretty inexpensive and you can really get them to fit nicely. And if you can't quite get them to fit right, you can always take a heat gun and you can heat and kind of mold the fender to where you need it. Don't put that gun on there for too long, folks. You'll burn right through it. So do be careful. But you can kind of custom form your fender too if you use something like that. So yeah, there's some great stuff out there. Depends on what you're thinking of doing. You know, if you're a bicycle touring person, fenders are kind of a nice thing to have, especially if you're going to get caught in a day or two of rainy weather and you've got all this gear on your bike, and it helps keep that gear, being the panniers, the sleeping bag, the tent, whatever, keeping them a little bit drier because of that. I also highly encourage you to get weatherproof little dry sacks that you can put your equipment in when you're doing something like that, because there is no thing that's worse than crawling into a cold, clammy sleeping bag. So you want to try to keep them dry. I would use more than just Fenders to do that sort of thing. But you know, they just have such a practical application. And again, they may look a little silly, but once you buy your first set of Fenders and you have you have them set up and positioned and established for that bike, whereas you might not keep them on all the time, but you only have them on certain times of the year, you're going to have them for life. They last a long time. It's rare that you have a problem with them unless you have an accident of some sort, or if you're one of those people that rode them off-road and got sticks and things stuck in them, you could smash them up a little bit there too. But they will last you a really, really long time. I've got Fenders that I have owned for 30 years or more, and they're quite useful. So that's my story on Fenders, and that's all I got for you there as far as my cycling tips of the week. I think Fenders are a good thing, and we should all try to take consideration on them because they're cool. They're totally cool. They really work well. So what's next on the old list here? So anyway, I got a call last week, and I was talking with my friend Richard Fries, who is a promoter and has been a promoter for some big cyclocross events and other events. And he's got an event that he's been doing for a number of years now. I think it's their fourth annual. I'm not sure. It's called the Natchog Epic. And he works with an organization called DomesticEvents.com. And they do three different events a year. And one of them, and their first one, is the Natchog Epic. And the Natchog Epic is kind of cool because it's up here in the northeast corner of the state. And it is a gravel grinder type of ride, because we do have a lot of dirt roads up here. So it's not all dirt roads up here, but there are a number of dirt roads involved. And let's see if I can figure out where I have. I think I have some information on this here. And I did post it on our Facebook Bicycle Talk page. So if you want to link in there, you can certainly link in. And while you're also looking at my ride to end cancer, you can link in there too. Got a couple of things posted up on the Facebook page today, so please feel free to click on and check it out. But anyway, this is on March 26, 2023. I'm actually going to be working with him on the 25th at the Pedal Power Bike Shop in Willimantic, Connecticut, and I'm going to be doing some emceeing and promoting and interviewing for him for this event, which is the following day. And it starts and finishes at the Thompson Speedway. It's a motorsport speedway up in Thompson, Connecticut. And it says here right on the information, I'll just go through this with you because I think this is something that you might want to know about, you might not want to know about. It says, beginners discouraged, novices warned, weather be damned. The fourth edition of the Quiet Hell, which he now calls it, will feature some modest changes to this exploration of the most formidable roads in Connecticut's northeast corner. Here are some details. All right, so all entrants receive a souvenir bandana, a number plate, and a timing chip. Timing chip is on the number plate, I believe. Route inventory sticker, rest stops, SAG service, post-ride meal, a beer ticket, raffle ticket, and results. So there are additional meal and drink tickets that will be available for a price. So friends and family are welcome to join in. Kind of cool. The supporters tour auto map will be available online and printed out at registration. The map will guide supporters to key course locations, as well as bakeries, cafes, orchards, farm stands, a winery, a cidery, shops, and scenic elements of the region. We have so much cool stuff out here, and I'm so excited that Richard figured this out and now knows, you know, what we have available, because it is a very, very wonderful and exciting place to ride a bicycle. So there's going to be a mass start for each category, which flaggers will provide guidance only for the first 6 miles. And then riders have to, they'll kind of be on their own at that point. Or they also may start on their own during the 30-minute period after the designated start time. Riders may not start early. So there are some details here also that you might want to know about. The 32-mile express option will be at a tourist pace with 3 support riders. I will be one of those riders by the sounds of things. I think I'm going to be running the sweep on that. But, you know, we'll see. We don't have all the details yet, and I've got more meetings to go to for that. But anyway, the route has 6 unpaved sectors, one of which is challenging, and 1,730 feet of climbing. All right. So although the route includes, this is on the express ride, although the route includes sector, what's it say here? Oh, it says sector 18, a.k.a. Le Cuisinart. Timid riders may take a paved bailout route. Apparently, there's a rough section, and I was forewarned of this by Richard. We were chatting about it, and, you know, this is the kind of stuff where I just kind of look at it and go, oh, boy. Let's go. But apparently there will be people that are less likely to ride this section. It's kind of a, you know, bouldery downhill, pretty rough section of off-road that is going to, it's going to be a little bit rough on the timid riders. But anyway, you know, if you want to give it a try, you can give it a try. I can coach you through it. Basically, coaching you through it is you don't think, you don't use the brakes a lot, and when you get in trouble, you pedal. Don't slam on brakes, and, you know, hope for the best on your way through. But, you know, that you have to be also encouraged by that type and level of excitement. So that's what it really comes down to. So anyway, good morning, Eric. Nice to see you here. Cool, cool, cool. Anyone else going to Ragbri? You're going for the first time. Pretty cool. I hear a lot of really cool things about Ragbri. Talk about a party. I think that there's a bike ride involved too, but I hear there's a party. You should have a really, really good time. I've heard nothing but great things from Ragbri. So that'll be a fun time. Let's see. There's a junior express category. Junior boys start 2 minutes before the girls. There's a single time segment. Top 3 finishers in each category will be recognized. The express route will have a water stop at Putnam Cyclery in Putnam, Connecticut. The express is a friendly tour, but each rider will be timed for 1 segment. By the way, there's all sorts of good food in Putnam, Connecticut, too, including coffee shops and other various things. Really kind of it's a nifty little town up in the northeastern corner. The Explorer details, which will be your next one. This is 61 miles, so it's a metric century. It's long. It's got 15 unpaved sectors and 3,900 feet of climbing. The Explorer will have a minimum of 4 timed segments. So there are these, you know, like Strava segments, whatever you want to call them, ride with GPS segments, whatever, along the routes here. And you can time yourself for those if you want to participate in the race end of things, should you be a competitive rider. The Explorer route will have that minimum of 4 time sections. Then Epic details. The Epic, okay, this is the big boy. This is an 82.5-mile ride with 18 unpaved sectors and a minimum of 5 time segments. The total elevation gain on the 82-mile ride is 4,600 feet. You know, I look at this and I ride the roads around here all the time, and that's really easy to hit on the roads around here too, but I know that possibly some of these unpaved segments that are out there go through places like the Natchog Forest or pick up the airline trail or whatever, which is really flat. So, you know, 4,600 feet for 82 miles is not terrible out here. It's actually kind of normal. So anyway, but of course you may put unpaved sections in there and it changes the whole flavor a little bit. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be two rest stops for the Epic and the Explorer riders. The Epic and Explorer routes will be scored as gravel fondos using computer chips. Course signage will be placed to alert riders to start and finish of each segment. The riders will be scored based on cumulative time of all segments. For the Epic and Explorer categories, gift baskets and awards will be presented, and the top three finishers in the following age groups for each gender, open 45 plus, 55 plus. Riders must finish by 3 p.m. to be eligible for award. All riders must finish by 5 p.m. Could be a long day in the saddle on something like this. There are, like I said, there's some bumpy stuff out there, but it's so cool. And you're going to see so many cool places. There's these farms that are tucked away on these back dirt roads that you just never knew even existed. This is the nicest part of Connecticut that you will ride your bike in. It really is gorgeous out here. I say that with high opinion, obviously, because I live here. And I really do appreciate it. But I really don't think you're going to find many other places around the state that are as nice as this. We have a very New England-like atmosphere out here because we have such a large combination of rural and dirt roads and paved roads and just roads that just never end. They're all over the place. So it's kind of cool. So can't wait to see some people come out. I don't think I'll see Mr. Kane show up, though, seeing as he's in Adelaide, Australia. So, hi, Chris. How you doing this morning? Nice to see you on board with us. So, yeah, we have people to listen to us all over the world. Kind of cool. I'm just very excited by that. Very, very cool. Thank you for staying up late and listening to us today. That's great. Let's see, what else do we have here? The courses are marked, but the riders are responsible for navigation. Digital routes will be distributed by way of email prior to the event. Cue sheets will be available at registration. Although SAG service and rolling mechanics will patrol the route, riders should be equipped and prepared to make their own roadside repairs. Rain bag service will be available at rest stop one. Riders may pack dry clothes at the start area or shed clothes at each rest stop to be returned to the finish area. Drawstring bags will be available upon request at the rest stop. And of course, organizers reserve the right to shorten the route due to foul weather. Oh, shoot. Let's not do that. We're having fun here. So anyway, that's the Natchog Epic. And I told Richard I would talk about this. I will continue to talk about this in weeks to come because it doesn't happen until the 26th of March. On the 25th of March at the Pedal Power Bicycle Shop in Willimantic, Connecticut, there will be some festivities that afternoon and into the evening. We're going to have some fun stuff going on there. So it should be a good time or make a big party out of it. I looked this up online. Let's see if I still have it available here at Bike Reg. And let me see if I can pop this page up. I believe that I went to the Who's Registered list on this, and there are already 573 riders pre-registered for this event. So this is a big deal. It's going to draw a lot of people into the area. I think there's already waiting lists on a few of the rides. I believe that the Express ride, I thought I looked at that, and it says here 50 entries, and I thought I saw that they were almost sold out, if not sold out. And yes, there is a waiting list of 4 entries. So yeah, they've already taken in 50 riders on that. So if you're interested in this and you want to get involved in it, I'm encouraging it now because I've got a funny feeling this event is going to sell out. It's epic. It's classic. It's probably like nothing you've ever done before. Or it's like a lot of things that you've done before, depending on what your level of dedication to your bicycle and to events like this are. But a big, big push here for the Natchog Classic. This is going to be a really, really, the Natchog Epic, I should say. It's going to be a really, really fun ride this year. And that would be Sunday, March 26th in Thompson, Connecticut. So gave you a big bump there, Richard, if you're listening. So anyway, I think it's a cool idea. I like the idea of it. I've always been a big fan of riding on dirt roads and off-road. I often, if you ride with me, have ridden with me in the past and have never been on a dirt road, I apologize because I almost always include a dirt road on most of my rides if I can, because there we have so many like really good dirt roads, like really in good shape. Some of them are in better shape than the tarred roads are out here. That gives you an idea just because they're so hard packed and all. There's certain times of the year you have to be careful on them. This time of year when the roads are a little bit little damp from winter and, you know, from snow melt and that sort of thing. And then also we have a few roads around that I'm thinking of one particular one that's in Lebanon called Briggs Road. One of my favorite roads because of what it avoids for you on the bicycle as far as not having to climb something just treacherous to get to a really nice area. And instead you take this little dirt road across and there's, it's great. It just takes out that harsh stuff. You don't find these roads by going on rides like this. You find these roads by just going out and riding your bike going, hey, I wonder where that goes. It's one of my favorite things to do when I ride my bike. I love to go to places that I have not seen before. I can usually make a pretty good decision after I have done a road like that as to whether or not I would ever do it again or not. Sometimes those factors are that the road just turns into a really, really bad situation. There's one out in Lebanon that I have ridden on numerous times, although not in a few years. And it starts out really nice dirt on one side. It starts out all paved on the other side. It goes through. There's a section where you get to farmers' fields, and it's obviously just like an access route for a tractor to get through because it's really rough, but still really cool because it brings you around this like huge hill, and you still have to climb to get out of it, but it's not terrible. It's not as bad as it would be if you went the other way. So, you know, that's open your mind, you know, and check it out and see what else is cool out there. Dirt roads can be fascinating. And do you need a gravel bike to do this? Well, the bike industry would like to make you think that you do. It depends on the road. It really depends. I ride on everything. I ride my road bike on a lot of places. I'll ride my road bike on the rail trail out here, which is not paved. And I really don't have a problem with it. But since I've graduated to riding on a bicycle that has a wider tire on it, because, you know, as we get older, we get smarter. And the wide tires are obviously the better idea. I'm riding on 28s or above right now. So 28C tires can pretty much handle a lot of the dirt roads, especially if they're in pretty good shape. If you're doing an event like this, you probably might want something a little bit more durable. My cyclocross bike can go anywhere. I have no problem with it whatsoever. So again, that depends on your skill level, depends on where you're at on your bike, how confident you are with where you ride your bike and how you can do it. So there are some limiting factors there. And I will say that I am not as crazed as I was when I was younger. So I am a little more cautious than I used to be, but maybe just a little. Maybe just a little. I still love to just ride my bike in places where people go, you can't ride your bike there. And I just kind of chuckle and go. I've done back when mountain bicycles were first a big issue, and we were selling a lot of them at my bike store. It was, we couldn't really keep them in stock. They were moving out the door so quickly. And so there were a lot of people that were riding mountain bikes, and I got invited to a mountain bike ride on a Sunday. I went, well, I really don't have a mountain bike, but I said, yeah, I might consider coming. Oh, yeah, just grab a bike off the rack, Ron. You know, people think that if you own a bike store, you're, you know, made of millions because you own all these bicycles. No, you don't own them. The bank owns them, and you need to sell them. That's more important than anything else, but another story. So anyway, I just, you know, pulled my cyclocross bike out and put some air in the tires and, you know, showed up. And they all just looked at me and said, "You can't ride that where we're going today." And I looked at him. I started laughing. And I said, "Really?" I said, and we were at Mansfield Hollow, which is a state park, which is right next to where I live. It's actually right behind me here. It's in my backyard. I'd ridden my bike all over Mansfield Hollow. I'd promoted cyclocross races at Mansfield Hollow since 83. That would be this right here that I have on. It's, you know, to me, it's like, why do you need a mountain bike? So I showed up with a cyclocross bike, and they all kind of chuckled and laughed at me, and then proceeded to ride over a couple of big logs that were part of a flotation system for the reservoir, and I watched them do that, and I rode up to it full steam with everyone, you know, with their mouths wide open going, "Oh my God!" And I'm not a good jumper. I'm not a good guy as far as that goes. So I just dismounted the bike, hopped off the bike, jumped over the barrier, and hopped back on my bike. And they go, no, you got to ride over it. And I said, "Why would I want to ride over it?" And they said, "Because it's a mountain bike ride. This is what you do." People get so defined in their ways of doing things. It just kind of like amazes me sometimes. So I turned around and went back, and then I rode over it. And I just rode up to it. And, you know, I popped the front end of my bike up, and I pedaled over it and down the other side. And they looked at me and said, "We've never seen anyone do that before." I said, "Let's ride." And off we went. Spent most of the day waiting for them. Every time things would get tricky and, you know, they would have to slow down and dance through and do this whole thing on their bikes. And I would just blast through it because you got no choice when your tires were only 32C wide. You just kind of have to, you know, basically, what do I tell people? Just shut up and ride your bike. So you just kind of have to go through it. And, you know, sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't. But, you know, that's how you learn. That's how you learn how you ride your bike. So anyway, I've been known to ride in places on my road bike where some people have felt it's a little too sketchy to do that sort of thing. I'm just riding my bike. That's all that. Yeah, Eric says it's the rider, not the bike. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you all the way. That's it, you know, and no better way to learn how to ride than to get into situations that are not really conducive to good riding. So, or good riding in one man's definition versus another man's definition. I say, you know, just like I've been saying it for years, just shut up and ride your bike. That's it. You know, you'll learn. You'll figure this out. You'll figure out the do's and don'ts. I teach people this all the time. And it's not, you know, it requires practice. It requires skill. It's not easy. Speaking of which, I have to mention this. I was out the other day. I had left the community center after teaching my class. And I had to make a delivery for Fran's office because she's a naturopathic physician and she has supplements that sometimes get delivered to her patients. And I needed to make this delivery, so I packed it in my car with me so I could do it right after I taught my spin class. And I'm going down the road and I get to a stoplight and there's a cyclist coming the other way. And he's stopped at the red light. He's not going forward. He's waiting for it to turn green, but he's not putting his feet down. This guy was big, big shout out to whoever this was. I don't know. He looked young, so I'm assuming he was somehow maybe a university student or whatever, but he did the most beautiful track stand I've seen in a long time. He stayed there balanced, you know, saw him correct himself a couple of times, but just really like classic. Nice bike handling. Really, really nice bike handling. The light turns, he zooms on through and off he goes. Never put his feet down. So again, these are skills that they don't happen overnight, but they can, you know, they eventually, if you practice them long enough, then you can learn. I do recommend, if you're learning how to do track stands or anything like that, where you're not putting your feet down, try to do it where there's a soft surface to tip over on, just in case you screw up, because you will screw up as you learn. It takes a little while to learn. It requires a little bit of an uphill kind of resistance to push against to hold yourself in place, but it can be learned, and it's kind of fun when you learn it. We used to ride up to stop signs with two people, and side by side we would get to the stoplight or the stop sign, and we would simply lean into one another and just not put our feet down, just balance against one another. A little riskier, for sure, I will say. Not good if you have an audience and you screw up, but it is kind of a neat skill to learn. And the more you spend your time on the bike, the more you learn. So anyway, bike skills, dirt roads. What a great idea. Really, really, really good. So something I talked about last week, I talked about the World Championships and how, it was great. It was just a wonderful world. I was listening to, I was pleasantly surprised this morning when I got up, I picked up BBC Radio. And on the public radio station, and there was an interview with these people in this little tiny town of about 9,000 people. Well, the town was the town that the World Cyclocross Championships were in, and they were interviewing all the people about all the excitement that was coming to their town, and had they ever seen an event like this before? Of course they had, because they kind of live in the middle of cyclocross heaven, and so there was a lot of talk about how some people are upset because it brings all this all these crowds here, but mostly we're very happy because it brings so much business to our streets, and the bakeries are really busy and the cafes are busy, and it's really, so that was such a cool thing. But one of the things I forgot to mention last week, as I was watching the worlds, the coverage, the camera coverage was outstanding. Unbelievable. Now, a cross course is it's kind of a closed course, and there's lots of twists and turns, and it's through woods and all different types of terrain. So to be able to have a camera on every corner of the course to be able to keep this thing live is a bit of a challenge. They had drones, and I got to tell you, they need to use drone coverage more in all the big bike races, because it was spectacular. You could watch every single thing that happened. You could see rear wheels kick out in certain areas that the drone was behind the two front riders or whatever. They had these drones all over the course. It was so cool. I would say that the real award goes to the drone operators at the World Cyclocross Championships. Spectacular job. Really, really cool. Hope to see more of that in the future. That was really neat. That was really, really neat. So anyway, let's see, what else do I have on here as we move past that? Got a couple more things we can talk about before we sign off here. To me, this is like as no-brainer as no-brainer gets. But anyway, it came from Bicycle Retailer, and this came from a studies and reports page at Bicycle Retailer. Outride research shows cycling benefits are more than physical. We spell it D-U-H. Okay, this is just me commenting, of course, but. Interesting thing here. This was just published on February 9th, so just a few days ago. Kids' brains light up in real time while bike riding. How about that? So, in addition to giving more kids access to bikes and places to ride bikes, the nonprofit Outride organization also studies cycling's cognitive and physical benefits. At the end of the day, what would be a dream for us would be for the information and evidence to get out there for people and parents to go, this is very real. This is from Mike Sinyard, specialized bicycle founder and co-founder of Outride. A decade after Sinyard helped start the program that would research how cycling could benefit kids with attention deficit hyperactive disorder, that day might be here, and it might lead to more kids turning pedals instead of only taking pills. Yay, yay, yay. I've talked about this in the past. I talked to Jeremy Powers about this because he grew up with this, and he was many time national cyclocross champion. He uses cycling to help him with his hyperfocus and thinks it's the best thing that ever happened to him. There's so much good out there about cycling. And, you know, we have a tendency here in this country to just throw a pill at everything. We can't handle the hyperactive kid, so we give them some Ritalin, and now they can be dealt with by, like, the normal people, which is not the right way to do it. Give them an activity which will take their brain to a place that will be positive for them. And don't criticize them for not being able to pay attention because they have this malady, you know. Anyway, I'll try not to get too out of control on this. But anyway, big shout out to Mike Sinyard for what he's doing here. This is a really wonderful thing. Cycling just really improves brain health. This is a big, big deal. What's great about cycling is you can do it in groups. And it helps aging adults with dementia prevention. Doing it in groups in the natural environment brings you to the nature and the environment. There's so many good things about cycling. And I'm going to read more about this later. Maybe I'll present a little bit more in the following episode. But to me, this is just the absolute no-brainer of all times. And I'm always amazed when I see a study like this come out. It's like, well, why wouldn't it? You know, I mean, this is my life. This is what I've been doing for my whole life. And to me, it's the best thing that anyone can do to enhance their life and improve their life. It's a good thing. Let's go on to the event page. Once again, I will mention the Natchog Epic 2023. That's Sunday, March 26th. And we will have more follow-up on that in the weeks to come. The International Ride of Silence is no longer a tentative thing. It is now for real on March 17th, 2023, and it will start off at the Mansfield Community Center. Again, these are all posted on the Bicycle Talk page, on the Facebook page, so you can check that out there. It's winter withdrawal time. Yeah, get out, get on your Zwift and kick some butt, even if it's your own, or try a spin class, or maybe you want to come to our Pedal to End Cancer on Saturday, February 25th, coming up really soon in a couple of weeks. And there again are more details on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. The Bicycle Game on the Early History of Bicycles in Hartford. Unbelievable, spectacular exhibit. This is at the State Historical Society in Hartford, 1 Elizabeth Street. Check it out. It's going on probably through the summer, so definitely a cool thing to do. And then, of course, March 26th through the 29th, online and in Washington, D.C., the National Bike Summit coming up. And so that is another thing on my things going on. And of course, the Queen of the Classics is only a few months away. Yeah, the Paris-Roubaix. But the classics really start at the end of this month. So we've got a lot of classics coming up. Very cool stuff. Finishing points. Don't forget about the Bicycle Game at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. The Natchog Epic is coming at the end of the March. And hey, calling out all of you invisible camouflage cyclists. Or camouflage cyclists. Get a clue. Defender or not defender, and I'm not talking about guitars here. You want to ride with Pedal and Ron, either live or virtual, check out the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. I'll say it again, and this will not be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Support your local bicycle shop. It's 2022. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it for a day. Use your bike. You might surprise yourself. All right, the views of this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is Pedal and Ron, and I am going to have to sign off now. So it's been great talking with you. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.